Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. And my interview today is with James Walsh, professor of American history at the University of Colorado, Denver, where he's taught for over 25 years. Dr. Walsh was on the show 2 years ago to talk about the Irish miners of the 1840s in Leadville and the brutal conditions they endured. In today's interview, I've asked Dr. Walsh to compare and contrast Ireland of the 1840s to the United States during this same period. I think it's important to understand that the Irish were fleeing the potato famine of the 1840s, but they were also fleeing 200 years of brutal English rule. It all started when Oliver Cromwell invaded Ireland in 1649. He and his 15,000 soldiers massacred whole villages. And when he left in 1650, his successors completed the seizure of the whole country. Land was taken from the Catholic owners, Catholicism was banned, and priests were killed. It's estimated that between 1649 and 1652, nearly 600,000 people were slaughtered. So the Irish who came to the United States in the 1840s knew a thing or two about colonialism and repression. We start our interview talking about Ireland in the 1840s.
The Great Hunger started around 1845, lasted into the 1850s. It was really a result of the fact that the Irish people had become dependent on one crop, the potato crop. The reason they became dependent on one crop is that they were relegated to a status of tenant farmers by the occupiers.
They basically took their land and made them serfs.
Yeah. And so when you're tenant farmers and you're in a cycle of debt you can't escape, and you find a crop that you can not only feed your family but grow your family, it spreads quickly. And so the potato became the signature crop of Ireland. In Europe, they called them the potato people. But the problem, of course, with dependence on one crop is that if something happens and the fungus came and wiped out the potato crop for multiple years in a row, and the Irish tenantry, the working class, was in a complete panic and crisis, more vulnerable than anyone imagined. And so it led to a mass migration. There had been some large-scale migration from the northern regions, Presbyterians and Anglicans leaving in the period before and right after the American Revolution. But now this was the Catholic population who saw themselves as exiles being forced out. They didn't see themselves as immigrants. It led to the population decreasing as much as 30 or 40%. But by the time it was over, it devastated the country, and they still, you could argue to this day, has not recovered from that.
And some people have argued that it never came back from mm-hmm. that loss of population.
It was over 8 million. The potato allowed the population to swell to over 8 million people. So what you have in America is boatloads of destitute, starving, desperate people who don't bring skills, industrial skills or education with them.
They were largely dumped on the docks in some places, weren't they?
Dumped on the docks, dumped in islands and quarantined because the fever, the typhoid, had broken out on many of the ships. So places like Gros Isle and the St. Lawrence River, Deer Island near Boston, Partridge Island off of the coast of St. John's, New Brunswick, they were all quarantine stations. And on each island, hundreds if not thousands, and on Gros Isle, as many as estimates go as high as 15,000 burials. In Montreal, where they built the Victoria Bridge across the river, only a decade after the famine, the workers uncovered a mass grave of 6,000.
Oh,
And so these mass graves are dotted all over the Canadian and American North or East Coast. Many of them are marked, some are not marked, some are even unknown. And so for those who survived, the mainstream America saw them with through a lens of fear, and they were obviously desperate, obviously poor, and they were, and so that struck fear in many people, that desperation.
And they were Catholic.
And they were Catholic, which was a big strike against them, yeah. Yes, and so all of those differences were used to justify ideas about how they were inferior. They were drawn like apes and by cartoonists like Thomas Nast. And so the reason they became largely an urban population is they didn't have the resources to get any land or to they needed to take the first jobs that were available. And that meant going to the cities. That meant industrial work, building the railroads, mining, all the dangerous work. And for many, it meant signing up in the military. Hmm. So at a time when the American government was pushing west and pushing the boundaries of the nation west and expelling indigenous communities, desperate Irish immigrants are pouring into the East Coast and signing up to be the foot soldiers.
Yeah, and heard that they had recruiters as they came off the boat as a way to, because they needed bodies.
Yeah, the same way the military recruits today. They don't go to wealthy high schools. They go to working class schools. Same thing. Find the most desperate, find the vulnerable, give them a musket and a uniform, and give them, and they can feel a little bit of respect for themselves with the uniform. But the problem with that, with the Irish, is that they left a war. They left behind an occupation where an empire occupied the country, controlled the country, and they entered the belly of another empire where they were asked to be the foot soldiers of that empire.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Dr. James Walsh, professor of American history, is describing how the Irish fled the famine and the English repression of the 1840s in Ireland, only to find themselves in the United States on the front lines of Western expansion. And no one wanted Western expansion more than President James Polk. In 1844, shortly after he was elected, Polk welcomed Texas into the Union as the 38th state. But he was only just getting started. He believed that the Mexican territory to the south and west was ordained by God to be part of the United States. And when Mexico refused to sell it, Polk hatched a plan to take it.
The Irish soldiers were a huge part of the guerrilla wars that swept the American West of indigenous communities, the annihilation of indigenous communities. For example, in Leadville, every time the Utes were thought to have done something threatening, the first people sent out to quell the unrest were the Irish. And so when President Polk wanted to expand the U.S. territory, and not just to take what is now the Southwest, but even the entire country of Mexico, there was lots of talk about seizing the entire country.
Right.
And that wasn't done because, for racist reasons, they didn't want that many brown skin voters in the U.S. So the northern half of Mexico was seized. And of course, that army was full of Irish Catholics.
From what I've read, Polk engineered a crisis on the border with the Mexicans because he wanted to go to war, but he wanted them to be the first to strike.
Right.
And so he sent General Zachary Taylor into Mexican territory, and he got the fight that he wanted. But he lied to Congress and everyone else and said that the Mexicans had struck and hit them on American soil. And the war was already underway without Congress's approval. And is that accurate?
Yeah, that lie persists in the American history textbooks that our children read today. I can distinctly remember reading about the Mexican-American War in high school, that it was the U.S. was defending itself. So Polk's lie, I mean, if a powerful country wants a war, provoking one is an art. You just need to send soldiers to disputed land, and you know the excuse is going to happen. And that's sort of related to what the U.S. is doing with Venezuela today.
There are some parallels, yes.
Many parallels, yeah.
Well, and Zachary Taylor wasn't real excited about going down and doing that. He thought this was unnecessary, but Polk had a plan, and it was manifest destiny, right? Can you talk a little bit?
A 19th century idea that it was God's will that a superior people take the continent and make the land more useful by removing groups considered inferior. So that, again, a mentality that's alive and well today in American foreign policy. Today we call it American exceptionalism, but it's really the same thing as manifest destiny. So these Irish soldiers, they faced a dilemma because they were being asked to do things like burn Catholic churches. They were witnessing atrocities against nuns. They were, their own Catholicism connected to Mexican culture. So that was one piece. Plus, Catholic soldiers in the U.S. Army at that time were disciplined in a disproportionate way. And so they felt more like prisoners than they did, soldiers.
They were on the banks of the Rio Grande, and they could hear the Mexican church bells across the way. And, they had a real identity with the Catholic Church, and mm-hmm. Latin was spoken across the world.
Yeah, that's true. And when they heard those church bells and met Mexican people, a sense that they were on the wrong side of the same fight they left behind.
Yes.
That they were on it was a similar war, but this time they were on the side of empire.
Well, and I'm sure they had heard the stories of Cromwell, who at England's behest wiped out whole villages mm-hmm. in Ireland when the English came.
Right.
So they also had some affinity to the Native Americans because they were clan people, mm-hmm. tribal in their own way.
And sent thousands, if not tens of thousands, of prisoners of war from his escapades in Ireland, Cromwell did, to sugar plantations in the Caribbean. And that's why today those islands have such a deep Irish identity. So the Irish did what many would do, is they crossed over. I think it's important to point out that this was not all or even most of the Irish soldiers. This was just a few hundred.
Yes.
They crossed over and they joined the Mexican army. They fought for Mexico against the U.S. They flew a green flag with a harp. They were called the San Patricios. And they were, according to the U.S. military, the fiercest fighters in that war. At the end, they hanged about 50 of them the last battle. And they're commemorated in Mexico City, and I believe in Ireland as well. There's some sort of commemoration. It's a story you will not find in any American history textbook. I don't think any middle school or high school students are taught this story, but it speaks profoundly to the dilemma that immigrant communities face when they become accepted in the U.S., into U.S. society, or they fight for acceptance into U.S. society. But part of that acceptance comes with a price of being asked to do something against their moral code, what the military calls moral injury. So the story of the San Patricios is a powerful story, and I believe a story that the Irish people today have lots of questions about why Irish Americans have drifted so far to the right. In fact, I was even given a term by someone in Ireland, the alt-Irish. That's a term that's used to describe Irish Americans. And that the American empire has swallowed up Irish Americans to such a degree that there's no longer a connection with who we were historically.
The alt-Irish, what does that mean?
It means Irish Americans who have become white.
Huh. Because we were always seen as black.
As non-white.
Originally, yeah, yeah. As non-white.
So Irish Americans, to become white, had to go through this jujitsu. Huh. And twist ourselves into something we're not. But the prize was comfort and acceptance, which our ancestors desperately lacked. So it's understandable why a lot of Irish Americans went in that direction. But I think today we need a revival of the San Patricios.
Right. The Mexican War is not remembered by the United States for a reason. Mm-hmm. It was a wicked little war. And Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee were soldiers, just officers, just out of West Point, and they fought in that war. Mm-hmm. And Grant had no good things to say about it, nor did a young congressman named Abraham Lincoln.
Well, it was a war of white supremacy.
We took the land from the Mexicans.
And people celebrate the Alamo, but the struggle for independence from Mexico was because of the desire to expand slavery into Texas. It was, of course, in Mexico, slavery was illegal. So that's never part of the Alamo
story that's
told. And
in Ireland, it was illegal. It was outlawed in Ireland, yeah. Well, the Mexican War caused this land controversy and this slave controversy to start to boil. And 15 years later, the Civil War, because the land acquisition was California, New Mexico, Nevada, parts of Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, mm-hmm. Utah.
Yeah, most of Colorado.
Right.
Was part of Mexico at one point.
A lot of people don't remember is that we occupied Mexico City. We took over the country.
Mm-hmm. And at that moment, a lot of people wanted to seize the whole country.
Right. That was the controversy was, mm-hmm. do we take the whole thing or do we leave part?
Yep.
And you were saying that we left the more populated part because too many Mexicans.
Yes. That's the reason why Puerto Rico is not an official state today. Mm. That's the reason why the last two states in the lower 48 to be granted statehood are New Mexico and Arizona. Huh. It's kind of a hidden part of the U.S. history is this embedded white supremacy. And so today when Irish Americans witness ICE agents like stormtroopers going through American cities and grabbing people off the street and pulling people from cars and brutalizing them, that must tug at something in our DNA that must disturb us in a deep way because of this history.
Well, I feel my DNA being tugged. I'm sure you do too.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the hardest working elements of our society and the least dangerous communities in our society are the ones being labeled criminal. And the most dangerous elements of our society are in the halls of power. And so the world's upside down, the country's upside down. And so I think Irish Americans have a big role to play in the coming changes, given our history. I think of all Europeans, Irish people have had an important and unique role.
They don't have to go too many generations back to remember that they were the ones being brutalized.
Yeah.
They were being ground up in the mines of Leadville and Butte, Montana, and other places. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the great conundrum of being Irish American, I believe, is that by any statistic, Irish Americans are very comfortable today, educated, all of it. But we're only a few generations removed from deep desperation and backbreaking labor. Just a few generations.
Yeah.
So that's
just a few.
That's close. That's close. And so what does that mean about who we are and what our identity is a question that's been central to my work, my teaching, my writing. It's a question I ask myself every day.
Well, yeah. How did it manifest itself in the minds of Leadville? I mean,
Well, many previous historians made the mistake of arguing that the farther west the Irish went, the better life became, the more acceptance they experienced. Leadville runs counter to that completely. The Irish were on the lowest rung of the social ladder by any metric. They were the largest community by 2 to 1, larger than any other community. And they were the mules. They were the human mules that brought the silver out of the mines and did the smelting and hauled the charcoal, built the railroads. They did everything backbreaking. The Irish were the ones who did it. So the number of people who died in that work, the number of people who were maimed in that work, we can't even count. And I'm not talking about Leadville now. It's really the whole country. For people who were enslaved and their descendants.
Right.
For the people who were occupied in the Southwest and their descendants, Spanish speakers, for Irish immigrants and their
and the Chinese.
Chinese. We can't forget
the
Chinese.
Built the railroads.
Wow. And they faced even higher death rates because they were blasting through the Sierra Nevadas. I think maybe the highest death rates of any single job were the Chinese laborers who blasted through the Sierra Nevadas. So the human toll of this industrial labor, that's the story. And that's a war whose veterans we've never recognized.
Interesting, yeah.
And there's hundreds of thousands of those dead. And so that's what the Leadville Memorial, we didn't plan for it to represent that, but it's come to represent because it's people buried in pauper graves, unmarked. They're desperate immigrants for the most part.
Well, and the Irish were replaced by the Italians. The Italians were the next group.
That's right.
To occupy the mule status.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Italians,
Polish workers,
Polish, German Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But today we have Latinos are taking that role and being treated in many ways like the Irish were.
I hear too many European Americans say something like, my people did it the right way, and these immigrants today are doing it the wrong way. Something like that. That's a very common a way of delineating between
I'm different.
One immigration and another immigration. What we need is to dispense with that. And, you know, the laws were different then. So,
well, there were no laws. We were dumped on the docks. Our ancestors were dumped on the docks of Boston and New York.
At that time, all you needed to do was be in the country 5 years and you become a voting citizen.
This is 50 years before Ellis Island was even thought about.
If there was such a thing as undocumented at that time, the Irish certainly would have been. So
exactly.
What we need to think more in terms of is solidarity.
Yeah.
Solidarity across generations, across cultures, across nationalities. And so back to that point that the Irish Americans have a unique and important voice in this moment in American history. And we should be expressing it more deeply.
That was Dr. James Walsh, professor of American history at the University of Colorado Denver, talking about the Irish, resident James Polk, and the United States' Western expansion. President Polk and the Mexican-American War have been long forgotten. And I think that's because we don't want to remember the details of what Ulysses S. Grant called the most wicked little war. Some think Polk was a great president, but Abraham Lincoln saw him as an unscrupulous imperialist who ignored the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Citizens of the United States may have trouble remembering the Mexican-American War, but Mexicans will never forget how half of their country was taken. And years from now, when we've forgotten the time when masked agents of our government snatched innocent Latino immigrants off our streets, and our Department of War went looking for its wicked little war in Venezuela, who do you think will remember? You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. To hear other immigrant stories, you can go to our website, immigrantstories.net, or to our Immigrant Stories Facebook page. You can find us at kdnk.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast. Special thanks to Dr. James Walsh for all he has done in his career to give voice to those immigrants who are long forgotten but helped build this country. Thanks for listening, and always remember to remember.